Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. The last 5 years have seen a remarkable set of powerful movements and trying circumstances. Me Too, the incomplete racial reckoning that followed George Floyd and Breonna Taylor's killings by police, the Trump presidency, and now the comprehensive rejection by the Supreme Court of the federal right to an abortion in the Dobbs case. Into this mix comes a new exhibit at the Oakland Museum of California, Hella Feminist, which features the work of contemporary artists responding to these times in an examination of historical items from the museum's archive. The exhibit challenges visitors to interrogate the history and conception of feminism. We'll talk with the curators and you about what feminism is and needs to be in this moment. That's all coming up next. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. The Oakland Museum's new exhibit, Hella Feminist, was scheduled to open 2 years ago to mark the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment, which guaranteed women the federal right to vote, though only some could make good on that constitutional promise. The pandemic pushed the opening into a drastically changed climate for women and pregnant people after the Supreme Court overturned the federal right to an abortion, arguing that it wasn't deeply embedded in the history of the country by drawing on pre-19th Amendment precedents. With reasoning like that, it's a fraught moment for all who are not cis, heterosexual, white men with mainstream religious and cultural beliefs. The kind of moment, perhaps, for a renewed and powerful feminist movement to address. Joining us to talk about this new exhibit, Hella Feminist, we're joined by the three curators of the exhibit. Karen Adams is curator of art at OMCA. Welcome, Karen.
Hi.
Erendina Delgadillo is consulting curator on the Hella Feminist exhibit at the Oakland Museum. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
And Lisa Silberstein is co-curator of the Hella Feminist exhibit.
Morning. Nice to be here.
Lisa, let's start with you. How did you have to reconceptualize, or how did you attempt to reconceptualize the exhibit when you realized you'd be working in a really different cultural moment?
Yeah, well, what happened at the pause, when we had to pause the exhibition due to coronavirus, we realized that we could go back to some of the collaborators and artists that we've been working with and share with them about our exhibition and ask them what had changed for them in this time period. This exhibition is really about a contemporary response to feminism. And because the moment had passed, we really wanted to have an opportunity to get back with those folks and see where they were at and see what minor shifts or adjustments we could make to the show, because we wanted it to reflect the moment we were in.
Yeah. So Karen Adams, curator of art, you go back to the artists and you say, all right, you get a second chance. You can rethink what you were going to do. Is that something that people were like excited about, or were they crushed by, or what was the response?
Oh, I think all of our collaborators saw it as an opportunity. It was also really reaffirming because there was so much that still felt relevant, that still felt urgent and necessary. So that part of it, the bringing back together of everybody to be able to think about the present moment and also who we were, what we had been doing, it wasn't the major significant shift, I guess, in all of the contributors' projects, but I think, yeah, it wasn't as much of a complete redo as maybe we're making it sound. Mm-hmm. I think the coming back together led to expanded ideas about the role of joy and grief, mm-hmm. and we definitely had a chance to include some artwork that hadn't been part of the original mm-hmm. plan, but I think it was definitely reaffirming to hear from the artists that they felt like we were still speaking to the moment.
Yeah. And Dina, with the historical objects that are in the exhibit, do you think the same objects could speak to both moments, but maybe just with a slightly different interpretive lens? Or did you feel like maybe we should swap things out, or maybe a different set of objects would make more sense? Or how did you approach that?
We when we started the project, we were really intentional about pulling only from our own collection to represent those, stories from the past that to us, from, again, this contemporary perspective, represented feminist principles and ways of organizing and working. So the stories themselves didn't change too much. We didn't really shift the way that we were interpreting those moments in history. But I think what did come out of the convening, like Karen mentioned, was a sort of understanding that this moment that we live in is heavy, right? These 2-3 years that we've experienced together have brought, a lot of uncertainty and sort of anxiety and grief. And so the convening participants asked that we create moments, where we could to both recognize those heavy feelings and help visitors process them where possible. And so that helped us, I think. The exhibition is organized into three sections: mind, body, and spirit, and you go through them in that order. Mm-hmm. Mind is, sort of the most dense. You'll find, most of the historical material lives there. Mm-hmm. And there were still some stories of, taken from history, rooted here in the East Bay, that are in body, and there were a few in mind, and we decided to remove some of the more sort of heady material that was in body and spirit, mm-hmm. in order to create an experience that started, in your head. There's a lot of information to take in there, and then slowly sort of released and made more space for people to. There's a lot of really emotionally poignant work in that spirit section, and so it felt like the conversation helped us be intentional about sort of balancing the intellectual with the emotional and leaving a lot more space in the spirit section for folks to just sort of feel and be held in that experience.
We are talking about the Oakland Museum of California's Hella Feminist exhibit and what feminism means in this moment. We're joined by Erendina Delgadillo, the consulting curator of the Hella Feminist exhibit, Karen Adams, curator of art there at the museum, and Lisa Silberstein, co-curator of the exhibit as well. We'd love to hear from you. What does it mean to be a feminist in this moment? And have these last few years, the different major changes that we've seen with the pandemic, Me Too, racial reckoning, has your definition of feminism changed or expanded? You can give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. I know all these curators are very interested in having this be a conversation with people who are confronting these issues and organizing in this moment. The social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, it's KQED Forum. And the email is forum@kqed.org. One of the things that is in the exhibit, kind of in this, on this theme of grief and loss and, kind of collective care, is a number where people can call in and leave their stories or leave their emotions and listen to other people's. So why don't you want to set this up, and then we're going to listen to a couple of the recordings.
I'm happy to give a bit of background. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That was a new element that came in post, the second convening, that second conversation we had with collaborators, again, wanting to hold space for some of the uncomfortable feelings that we've all been holding for the last few years. And like you said, there, one of the themes, especially in the mind section, is sort of collective care and collective education. I remember during the pandemic, there was a phone line, I don't remember where it was, where some elementary school, in this country, had students leave messages of support and encouragement, just sort of in general for all of us. And I thought that was a really kind gesture, and knowing that, this Dobbs decision was looming, that, all of the sort of new legislation restricting gender identity and sort of people making choices, about their own bodies, that sort of attack on bodily autonomy that's, sort of ramping up. That it would, we had opportunity to invite visitors, you know, most of the folks who call in have been local, to offer their experiences around those issues, especially I think around reproductive justice, when so many of those stories are sort of hidden or, shameful, to leave an anonymous, you know, to offer an anonymous space where folks could share their own experiences. And there are, you know, wide range of experiences that folks have offered, and some words of encouragement for people going through, you know, a similar experience. So again, an opportunity to sort of try to build and connect community.
Great. Let's listen into a few of those messages.
I had a child when I was 17. I grew up in a very small town and never had a good relationship with my mother. So I never really had any education around sex or anything. So I had a child. I got pregnant when I was 16. I had my child when I was 17. And when I was 18, I became a sex worker because I was a young.
Hi, I have a beautiful one-year-old daughter. And the day that Roe versus Wade was overturned, very upset. So I decided I needed to channel that and write her a poem. So I'm sharing it here, and maybe it will be of source of comfort for our next generation. May she know joy beyond measure. May she know love, profound and unconditional. May she feel held by earth and mineral, sky and cloud.
Lisa Silberstein, as we've listened to these phone messages, you also have a big board that's up in the exhibit, kind of giving people a chance to sort of reflect on their relationship to feminism as well. Have there been things that have surprised you about what people have wanted to share?
I wouldn't say that things that surprised me. So this interactive is an opportunity for people to answer sort of three different prompts. One is, I'm a feminist and I'm a feminist, but, and I'm not a feminist, but. And I don't think it surprised me. I think what has been really interesting is just how, you know, feminism is such a complex, I don't want to say controversial, but complicated word, and different people have different relationship to it, identify, don't identify. And I feel like we wanted to provide people with the opportunity to reflect on that as they're entering this exhibition and thinking about what they're bringing to it. And what they're hoping to, you know, engage with around the word feminism and how they identify. I wouldn't say I'm surprised by any of the responses. I think they're really interesting, and I think it really gets at the nuances and how personal and, you know, different this is for people depending on who you are and where you're from and what your life experience has been.
Yeah. We're talking about the Oakland Museum of California's Hella Feminist exhibit and what feminism means in this moment with Lisa Silberstein, co-curator of the Hella Feminist exhibit, Erendina Delgadillo, consulting curator, and Karen Adams, curator of art at the museum. We'd love to hear your answer maybe to the exhibit prompts that Lisa just described. I'm a feminist, but, or I'm a feminist and, or I'm not a feminist, but. The number's 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It's KQED Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about the Oakland Museum of California's Hella Feminist exhibit and what feminism means in this moment with that exhibit's curators. Erendina Delgadillo, consulting curator, I wanted to ask you about this task of going back through, you know, the museum's holdings to kind of trace a feminist arc through the collections. I mean, how'd you go about that task? And, you know, how big is the museum arc? Just give us a sense of like what it was to try to pull out these particular items.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, seems awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. We have really tremendous colleagues in the collections department who have worked for quite a long time to offer curators greater access to the material in our collections. And so it was a partnership, of course, between the three of us and our colleagues in collections to find stories, again, that from primarily women whose actions represented sort of feminist principles as we understand them today, but didn't necessarily consider themselves or call themselves feminists in, you know, while they were alive or in the work that they were doing. So we looked at, you know, we had a few leads, and part of the convening conversation, the initial one, was to, you know, to sort of workshop some of the historical ideas and little vignettes that we were building out and ask, you know, our community members if there were any sort of, you know, stories from their families or things that we wouldn't necessarily have found in history textbooks. And that was our goal, right, to highlight those undertold stories of everyday feminist resistance in the East Bay. Mm-hmm. And so some of those, there was a lot of fun to sort of develop an interpretive framework that allowed us to read some of those actions and women as feminist. One of the people that we just fangirled over super hard for years now is a woman named Toni Stone, who was the first woman to play in the, you know, professional baseball in the United States. She played in the Negro Leagues, but it was a professional league then. Mm-hmm. She came from St. Louis in the early 1950s to care for her sister here in Oakland. You know, by way of a family member, met someone who was in the Negro Leagues and invited her to play. She was an excellent player. Mm-hmm. And again, she never considered herself feminist, but she only played for 2 years within the Negro Leagues, playing for the San Francisco Sea Lions and then the Indianapolis Clowns, and finally the Kentucky Monarchs. And, you know, she, in small and, you know, occasionally larger ways, continued to live her life on her terms, which again, that sort of self-determination is a big part of how we understand feminism now, or a tenet of contemporary feminism. She, you know, refused to wear skirts on the field and wore pants just like her other not co-workers, team members.
Team members, yeah. Colleagues, yeah.
You know, they were trying for a bit to leverage her, you know, marketing-wise, to get people excited to go see this first woman, and she was pretty resistant against that, and then decided, you know, only 2 years into playing that she would, you know, made the decision to leave the field, to leave baseball entirely. She became an educator here in Oakland because her last manager refused to play her because she was a woman. You know, she had this excellent, you know, sort of worldly, or I imagine, like, you know, an experience that contributed to her worldview and like worldly experiences, and, you know, decided to end it on her terms when, you know, what that community was asking from her didn't align with her own sense of herself and her own values. So small stories like that are peppered throughout, in particular, the mind section. It was a lot of fun to sort of imagine what, or to sort of build a tapestry of stories that are, you know, we were intentional about trying to find examples of folks who could offer inspiration to people today, right? So not shying away from conflict or struggle, but you know, trying to show even in that struggle, small moments where people were able to, again, sort of live on their own terms, yeah. Which feels really important now. I mean, always, but now especially.
Let's bring in a caller. Leslie in Bolinas, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I'm not at all confused by feminism. I know that people do get tangled up in it, but I was at Berkeley in the 70s, early 70s, as a student, and when it all started to spring forth in a new way. And my perception of feminism was that it liberated not only women, but men in particular, from traditional roles. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if this exhibited at all.
That's an interesting question. Leslie, thanks so much. Karen, do you maybe want to tackle that one?
Yeah, I'm listening and thinking about my own experience and my mother's experience of that time period. And, you know, I think the way that we crafted this exhibition project was really in conversation with the artists that we were working with and the community that we brought into our convenings. And there isn't a singular spot in the exhibition to point to and say that, you know, we're illuminating the experience of men in the conversation about feminism, but we are very intentional and take people on a pathway through an experience that really tries to make the argument that feminism is for everybody.
Yeah. Could you maybe talk a little bit about, you know, you do go through the traditional representation of feminism as in a series, you know, in waves, kind of suffragettes and into second wave feminism and third and fourth. And maybe you could focus just for a second to Leslie's question on how you chose to represent third wave feminism, you know, in this sort of microcosm in the exhibit.
Right. So in the wave section of the exhibition, we knew that part of our task was to try to explain even what that means, but we were a little resistant to it, presenting it like a linear time frame, like a like, you know, on this date this happened and this person represents those ideas. And we were trying to be more expansive, to reframe really what does it mean to be feminist from that point of view. And you and I had a conversation in the gallery and you were asking me why is Ruth Asawa part of third wave feminism? And I was trying to...
And for those who don't know, these kind of beautiful... they're like air sculptures. Well, I don't know exactly how to describe them.
Yeah. I mean, Ruth Asawa is known for her amazing, ethereal, but monumental public artworks and intricately woven sculptures that suspend or hang or, you know, occupy space and create shadow. She's really a titan of Bay Area art and modernism. And I don't know that I've really seen her work presented in the context of feminism, but I think of her as, and, you know, our project and the way that we were trying to frame feminist action includes her. I mean, she was raising a family, being an artist and an educator in a way that expanded, I think, feminist action. So that's part of the way that we're trying to reframe what those waves that are often talked about in really concrete terms.
Yeah. Well, and you also brought in, and Andy, and I think you worked with them, a group to help you work with this, the Church of Black Feminist Thought, to complicate this idea of the waves of feminism.
Yes, we were really fortunate to be able to work with the Church of Black Feminist Thought. It's a project led by two PhD students, Ram Malaika Imhotep and Miyuki Baker. They were PhD students at the time at Berkeley, and they've since defended their dissertations and received their doctorates. But they organized, I think, starting in 2018, study groups to look at, to collectively try to understand some of the Black feminist theorists that they were learning about in class, or maybe not. And they created what they called theory maps, a sort of visual way of mapping the theories and ideas of some of these feminist scholars, primarily Black women. And we knew that visitors wouldn't necessarily feel satisfied with an exhibition on feminism if we didn't present in some way, you know, the sort of four waves of feminism, first, second, third, and the one that we're in now, although it seems to be shifting a bit. Mm-hmm. And that we as an institution hold a really different role than someone else, you know, another sort of voice that we were able to invite into that conversation. So we, you know, there are, in our presentation of the waves, we took some measures to try to make it clear that, you know, a discrete delineation, you know, by time of, you know, feminist history or the evolution of feminism is, you know, a little bit squishy. Some of the time frames that we give, you know, we say 1800s-ish, you know, sort of making it clear that, again, making, you know, chunking it out into a discrete moments that build on each other in a clear way is not, you know, the lived experience primarily of, you know, mm-hmm. folks of color, women of color. And so we invited them in to mine our collection to find objects that would offer a complementary and in some cases challenging addition to, you know, our own institutional voice and the way that we were presenting the history of feminism. And so they built their response primarily around the experience of a woman named, oh my goodness.
Catherine Smith.
Thank you so much, Catherine Smith. Her nickname was in, I got Kitty, but the rest of her name was not there. She was an enslaved, you know, woman who came to Oakland, found freedom through community. And we have a number of her materials in the collection. And so they you know, invoked their study group again, developed a theory map around her life and sort of inserting it into their own representation of Black feminist history. And we were really, yeah, grateful for their, you know, insight, for their expertise, and again, for offering a really generous counterpoint to that linear understanding of feminism that has been, from what we understand, harmful, especially for women of color and feminists of color trying to enter the movement, or at least be, yeah, sort of welcomed in or trying to work in partnership with groups mm-hmm. that have been a lot more visible, in feminist history.
We're talking about the Oakland Museum of California's Hella Feminist exhibit and what feminism means in this moment. We're joined by Erendina Delgadillo, the consulting curator of the Hella Feminist exhibit, Karen Adams, curator of art at the museum, and Lisa Silverstein, who is co-curator. We do want to hear from you. We're going to take some more of your calls shortly here. If you've seen the exhibit, we'd love to hear your reactions, of course. But we also are interested in this broader conversation of, you know, what does it mean to be a feminist in this moment, in a post-Roe world, in a post-Me Too world? The phone number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's KQED Forum. And you can email your questions or your comments, of course, to forum@kqed.org. Let's bring in Christine in Sunnyvale. Welcome, Christine.
Hi, good morning. I just have a quick comment and a question. Good morning. My comment is that my husband's great aunt many years ago had a t-shirt that read, "Feminism, the radical notion that women are people too," which I totally love. She was like 80 years old. And I just really excited to see the exhibit. I was wondering, my question is that do you have anything on, and I'm sure you do, the ERA and talking mm-hmm. about the people that were big in that time during that movement with Phyllis Schlafly on the right mm-hmm. and then people like Shirley Chisholm, who's the first Black, you know, nominated woman president, and just, you know, talking a little bit, you know, it's big sure. now with the Mrs. America, you know, docudrama, which talks a lot about the ERA and how it's not even ratified. So that's my question. Thank you so much for doing your exhibit. I'm really
great
excited.
Great question, Christine. Talking about ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, of course. Let's talk about this. It's a bracelet, right? The ERA bracelet is what sort of represents that as an object.
Yeah, it looks almost like something Wonder Woman would have worn. On TV.
Bring them back. I was surprised you didn't have that as merch in the shop.
I know. I think it would sell well.
So tell us a little bit about it.
The bracelet that you're referring to, it's in the section on the second wave of feminism, and it's clustered together with other artifacts in our collection. Somebody sitting tabling at that moment, an incredible piece by Gaza Bowen called Tough Scuffs, where the artist used her image, dressed in the persona of a house cleaner, and she made a pair of shoes out of
like high heels.
Yeah, it's like a high heel made out of a scrub brush. It's incredibly funny. So, you know, that moment in feminist history is touched on in that context in the waves. But in terms of people who participated in that moment in history, a lot, you know, some of their faces will show up in the work of Miriam Kleinstahl, whose project with Kate Schatz is called Work. and it's just across the way from the Wave section, and it's you know, focused on some well-known people, but it also includes plenty of people who are not well-known, who are kind of everyday feminists of the East Bay, and that's the really a focus, I think, of this exhibition. People who are not as well known, who weren't necessarily the major figures of any movement, but are actively participating in the conversation.
You know, Lisa, I thought maybe you could, you know, our caller there, Christine, you know, I think people come into an exhibit like this, and I think they're expecting, perhaps, like I know I was this way, you're kind of expecting to see a few different historical highlights that they may know or that are, you know, been crucial to their own experience. But the exhibit kind of tries to frustrate that idea, I think, a little bit, of like that you're just going to come in and kind of have like a miniature encyclopedia of like important characters and events.
Yeah, I think, you know, for us working on this project, we really were thinking about this as a response to this moment that we're in, that we're touching on, you know, historical feminism, but we're really looking at what's happening right now. And I think because we're the Oakland Museum of California, we're in the East Bay, I think we really wanted to focus on lesser known stories of everyday feminism, everyday acts of resistance that we equate with feminism. And that's our interpretation of this moment. And you will, as Karen said, see some local feminists that you probably have heard of, people that are in the community right now, people who are no longer with us, but for the most part, we're not, you know, there are plenty of other, you know, places where you can get the national story, you can get, you know, a deep knowledge of feminist history from the beginning. And this was really an opportunity for us to look at this everyday feminism and also hyper-local and people that you may not know about, and to learn a little bit more about folks that have been, you know, not acknowledged by history.
Yeah. One really great one is Flo Allen, who was an art model, like a fine art model, right, who then created the Bay Area Models Guild to sort of support people who were working in this way in a solidaristic effort.
Yeah, and we have a lot of pieces by artists of Flo in our collection, and so we wanted to highlight her and that story. She's someone who grew up in Oakland. And, you know, her work lives on in this model guild, even though she's no longer alive. She, you know, really advocated for, to started this, you know, there were models that existed and she started this guild, and that lives on today. And she lives on in these images of her that are in our collection. She was a powerful person.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the Oakland Museum of California's Hella Feminist exhibit and what feminism means in this moment with the curators of the show. We've got Lisa Silberstein, Erendina Delgadillo, and Karen Adams, who's also curator of art at OMCA. And loving hearing from you, too, about how your definitions of feminism have changed or expanded through time. 866-733-6786. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about the Oakland Museum of California's Hella Feminist exhibit and what feminism means to you right now. Wanted to go a little bit deeper into a couple of the really stunning works that are in the exhibit. Karen Adams, curator of art. Angela Hennessy is an artist who works a lot with black hair, and she's also a death doula, and she has displayed at the exhibit right now this pretty remarkable work called The Mourning Wreath. Could you sort of describe, imagine we're sitting right in front of it and we're looking at it. Can you describe it for us? And then we're going to play a piece of the sort of meditation that she wrote around it.
Yes. So Angela Hennessy, with Oakland Museum of California, is so lucky that she wanted to participate in this exhibition. The Mourning Wreath is a monumental sculpture. It's some people might be familiar with Victorian mourning jewelry that was crafted from the hair of, a beloved person who passed. But the mourning wreath is, larger than life. It's scaled, to be...
It's probably about 10 foot.
Yeah, it's about 10 feet in diameter, intricately woven and tufted and full of amazing little moments where you can see the way that Angela's hand, tied it in and wove it, and there are tendrils down to the ground. It's a really incredible, moving piece just as an object, really. But for Hella Feminist, Angela recorded an incredible meditation on grief. It was something that she had the time to think about, and when we reconvened, she was really struck by how important it would be to acknowledge the role of grief in this moment.
So let's just imagine you're sitting in front of this monumental mourning wreath, and let's listen in.
Grieve on the daily. Make time every day to grieve. Make grieving out of everyday gestures. Make folding the laundry grieving. Make sweeping the floor grieving. Make dancing grieving. Crying is beneficial, but not required. Just say, I'm grieving right now, while you are doing whatever you are doing. Say what it is you are grieving and be specific. I'm grieving gun violence. I'm grieving another Black person killed by police. I'm grieving Black bodies left in the street. I'm still grieving slavery. I'm grieving enslaved people buried in unmarked graves. I'm grieving grief that was never grieved. I'm grieving the Buffalo massacres. I'm grieving that I stand here on stolen land. I'm grieving the existential crisis that is this country, America, Turtle Island. I'm grieving gold and Black things, extractions and commodities of the colonial project. I'm grieving hairdressers who keep trying to colonize my hair. I'm grieving my auntie who died, but no one wanted to say she died. So we stood around her dead body, knowing what we didn't want to know, as if we didn't know it.
Goes on longer than that as well. It's just beautiful piece with this resonant voice, and you kind of see the intersectional weaving of different concerns there. And Dina, like, just to make the connection clear, like, what do you think is feminist about grieving?
I think that this moment in feminism, finally, thanks to the continued efforts of feminists and other folks who have been sort of pushed to the margins, at least, you know, in the sort of more pop culture or the conversations that have sort of pierced pop culture around feminism, have helped to make this moment really holistic, right? So we're looking at, I mean, intersectional is one way to frame that, but we're really looking at the full lived experience of what it means to be gendered, what it means to be racialized, what it means to be sexualized, on terms that aren't necessarily your own, right? So white supremacy, patriarchy, those sort of dominant systems are the ones that have been, you know, defining what it means in all, you know, to exist in all those categories. And so one of the tenets of, you know, feminism today that we've focused on in particular in spirit is, you know, sort of holistic wellness, right? So mental wellness, spiritual wellness, physical wellness, just looking, not having to segment out your experience again into inorganic, discrete, like separate ways of engaging in the world, but I think offering for visitors an opportunity to look at themselves fully and appreciate themselves fully, and then hoping to use those muscles to likewise embrace, you know, the sort of full humanity of the people that they're working with or working for or trying to create, sort of movements with, if that makes sense. So grief feels like, you know, it's, I think it's especially something that we're not used to discussing, much less processing, especially as a collective within Western society. And so bringing in some of these ancient indigenous practices, global practices, feels like a way to offer balance, which feels incredibly needed at the moment. And just in the sort of the ways that I was raised, you know, I was taught that you need that sort of emotional and spiritual grounding in order to do anything in the world, right? And in order to do it well, and to do it in a way that really aligns with your values and principles. And so that's sort of where I think grief fits in, is a sort of holistic representation of who you are, and then, you know, being able to offer that same full humanity to the people, you know, in your communities.
Let's bring in Mary from Mill Valley, who wants to talk about a different kind of balance.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to just, number one, say my compliments to the three curators. They sound very sophisticated and eloquent in how they're presenting the show. So it sounds like something very beautiful to go to. So I'm going to take my 104-year-old mother there, who is a nationally collected painter, and have her impressions, because she's seen a lot. And she was trying to get into art school to finish her master's at the age of 65, and she was denied by UC Berkeley because they said she was too old. So she went to the San Francisco Art Institute and became a nationally collected painter. At her first show, they were drawing straws, a couple of national, you know, foundations trying to get her paintings. So she finished painting about a couple of years ago, but she's had a very interesting career in looking at things as feminism. And she brought me into it. And one of the things that I think we need to think about when you're asking about this age of feminism and how it's changing is, unless we find the masculine side of ourselves and balance that as well as the feminine, and then take the men too and let them balance the feminine side of themselves as well as the masculine, I think we're not going to get there. I think it takes us both to find the balance within each other. And I think the pandemic is actually making us look at what are the roles that we play. And I think it's a very powerful time to look at that rebalancing. And was curious if perhaps in the future you could do any type of show about that.
Well, maybe some of the works in the exhibit actually speak to that. Thank you so much, Mary in Mill Valley. Best to your mom as well. It's quite an achievement to make it to 104.
Thank you.
Who wants to speak to that? To like, do you feel like some of these works address that either in passing or head on?
I think the time that Mary was speaking, I was just thinking to myself that this exhibition could spur on so many different exhibitions. There's so many different ways to talk about this topic, and we've known all along that there needs to be more shows to delve into it. Looking at Lisa across the room from me, how would we answer that question? What addresses Mary's thing directly?
I mean, I think that part of what we're offering is this idea. I mean, the premise that we took with this exhibition was that, you know, feminism is a series of strategies that, you know, are meant to that kind of play out in your, you know, meant to achieve equity for all genders and all people, you know, that play out in the mind, body, and spirit. And so I think, you know, in some ways it's not like we don't talk about this balance between the masculine and the feminine, but I think it's like inherently woven into all of the, you know, a lot of the elements and pieces in the show. And I think that sense of balance and what Arundina was talking about with, you know, things are not balanced right now. I think we all feel that. And I think we all are hungering and desiring for more balance and a sense that things are, you know, things are askew, and we want to right ourselves on some level, and it is going to take all of us. It's not just incumbent upon some of us to do this work. We all have to be participating in making things, you know, righting that balance and trying to build the world that we want to see.
Got a question for you from Melody in Richmond. Welcome, Melody.
Hi, thank you. I've had a career in the Bay Area in museums and art centers for about 15 years now, starting at the San Jose Museum of Art, the Palo Art Center, SF MoMA, and now the Headland for the Art. Yeah. And in my experience, I've seen a wide range of mega museums and small art centers. and how their permanent collection still seems to be predominantly men, and that seems to be mostly donors and collectors, and I don't know how much in terms of directors that influences the curator's ability to acquire more women artists. If there are metrics that you have at the Oakland Museum in terms of increasing your women artists collection, permanent collection, and if there are long-term goals for making that more open to people of color and trans artists.
Oh, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Karen, yeah, is that you, Karen?
Yeah, this is Karen. Yes. So those are great questions and ones that we've been grappling with for years. I've been at the Oakland Museum for 16 years, and you know, we're so fortunate to have an amazing director, Lori Fogarty, who's been leading the charge to really transform what it means to be a community museum, and that expands into the collection. And you know, the Oakland Museum was founded by the bringing together of three different institutions, natural science, art, and history institutions, to form one, and our collection is vast. Millions of things, artworks and artifacts and specimens. And, you know, we've just been working really hard to shift what comes into the collection, which is owned by the people of Oakland. So it needs to reflect who's in the Bay. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to, one of the exciting parts of working on the show for me has been offering, where we could, a bit of transparency around exactly what stories are missing in the collection. And sort of looking at, because we're a cultural institution and we encode history, right, and sort of meaning making, what happens when folks whose lived experiences make them experts in the objects and artifacts and artworks that we're bringing into the collection, what happens when they're excluded? There's a poster that was cataloged by a man. It's advertising hormonal birth control, shows a man and a woman naked embracing, and the text at the top reads, "Better loving through chemistry." And at the bottom left, it's black and white, but there's an image of a birth control, one of those pill packets, sort of in, you know, circle. And the man who cataloged it misidentified that object as a telephone rotary dial. So it was really funny to us as a group, obviously a little bit disturbing, knowing that something that's really straightforward from someone who has like a personal relationship or is like much closer to that object and the stories around that object, you know, it's very obvious for folks, again, whose lived experience mm-hmm. reflects, you know, that, or who are closer to that object. But it, you know, it's, so it would, there are a few moments there where we talk about the absences in our collection, and again, try to model the kind of transparency and like leading with learning as a cultural mm-hmm. institution to try to shift those collecting policies.
Let's bring in Lena in Berkeley. Welcome, Lena.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi. I've been listening to the conversation, and I had a response for the woman two calls back who was, you know, about balancing masculine feminine. And just to say that, you know, the queer community demonstrates that, lives it, models that for us all the time. And that I think any of the artworks in the exhibition, you know, by queer people or representations of, you know, trans or non-binary people, that embodies exactly that. So just to say, I felt like there was kind of an empty gap after that question. And I think that it's definitely present. And we can thank the queer community for demonstrating and embodying that and making that more possible.
Yeah. Stay with us, though, because I want to ask you, how about your work? What's your piece in the exhibit? Can you describe it to people?
Oh, well, I was one of the later people to be included in the exhibition, mostly following the Roe decision. I have a studio practice where I make objects, but I've also worked on a series of public posters that have spread across the country in past election seasons. So I've worked on a series of vote posters over the years, and this year, the 2022 vote posters that I made in collaboration with Hope Meng, two of the six that we designed this year on VIEW, Vote for Reproductive Freedom and Vote for Trans Rights, are in the show. And they're, the posters, there's a few thousand of them at the museum that they're giving away for free. And I love actually how the curators hung the posters. It's kind of in a circular format. So Vote for Reproductive Freedom is paired with trans rights, and then it's sort of a grid of four, and then underneath reproductive freedom is trans rights, underneath trans rights is reproductive freedom, showing how those two things are interconnected.
And through bodily autonomy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those who haven't seen these posters yet, I just want to say they're also extremely beautiful. I mean, they really are works of art that you can take home from the museum.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for listening and for calling in. We really appreciate that. The last thing I wanted to get to is another artist, only because Sandra Ibarra's work, you know, with the persona La Chica Boom, is so good and so interesting, and also seems to be kind of mashed together many of the different things that we have been talking about. Lisa, do you want to talk a little bit about that work just as we're heading out?
Sure. So Sandra Ibarra, who is an Oakland-based artist, we have a couple works of hers in the exhibition. The pieces that we have are from a persona that she took on that she's no longer performing as. She was a performing artist in addition to like visual artist. And so the character that one of the characters that she personas that took on was of a cockroach, the cucaracha. Mm-hmm. So we have her she has this project. So it's called the Spic Actesis is one of the pieces where she's physically molting this cockroach costume. And then we have the cockroach costume in a space saver bag that's attached to a vacuum where that the vacuum sucks in and out and the costume goes up and down. And then also there's an amazing video that features
cannot
her.
Cannot be set on air. Yeah,
and that cannot be set on air.
Yes.
The title of it. But it's her going about her day, waking up in the morning, going about her day and putting on her cockroach costume and going
it's
out
so
in town.
Good. Yes. Thank you so much for that. We've been talking about Oakland Museum's Hella Feminist exhibit with its curators, Karen Adams, Erendina Delgadillo, and Lisa Silberstein. This hour forum is produced by Blanca Torres, Grace Wan, and Jennifer Ng. Marlena Jackson-Rotondo is our engagement producer. Judy Campbell, lead producer. Our engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, Brendan Willard, Chris Hoff, and Christopher Beal. Our interns are Paul C. Kelly Campos and Lulu Ralda. Thank you so much to our guests. Thank you for the exhibition. Thanks for the calls and comments coming in. We appreciate you all. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.